We have got the first question Sarah just delivered to me. It is good to ask questions. If you have any questions, please write it down and we can discuss it, so that there is some feedback, because it's very important. It's written everywhere in the scriptures, always emphasized. Also from my own experience, if I have learned anything, I have learned because I asked many questions. If we don't ask questions, we will not get the answers. So the first question I got, which is very important, because being a student of Abhidhamma also, I can share some knowledge with you. What is the difference between the attention and awareness? Somebody was not clear about that. That is very important. In a way, we are knocking at the door of understanding the mind. And the more we investigate the mind, the more fascinating this thing that what we call mind actually is. This mind is an amazing collection of mental factors which work together, and Marcia and myself also, we have been trained in the school which emphasizes detailed understanding of the different functions of mind and matter. Of course, this is just a method, skillful means for understanding the mind. We can also use other methods. We will talk about it today, because it is connected with your study of the text. We can investigate the mind from the different ways, and it is the more we investigate, the more amazing it is, because mind actually is what gives us a feedback, what we put into the mind that we actually see. So depends how we put things into the mind, then we see things accordingly. And the this Yogacara philosophy is all based on that, and that's why it is so fascinating and complementary to any Buddhist studies, whether we study the Theravada or we study the Tantric meditation. The Yogacara understanding is very, very useful. The understanding that actually what we experience is just mind. It is also just skillful means. It is not a dogma. This is what is so wonderful about Buddhism. Buddhism does not like any dogma, real Buddhism. Buddhism is actually, the Buddha's revolution was the opposition to any dogma. You will find also in the scriptures, Buddha always emphasized, don't follow any tradition, don't follow any dogma, investigate yourself. See by yourself, then you can, only then you will get clarity. Don't believe what the elders say, don't believe what the tradition says, investigate, see. Now, in order to investigate and see, that's what, here we come to awareness and to attention. We need attention and we need awareness. These are the key points, but they are very different. They work together, not in every mind, because we do so many things with our attention and we are not aware. Hmm? Have you not experienced? Hmm? We do one thing, forget, and do another thing. Hmm? And we are in a mess. We are not in awareness. But we always use attention. Without attention, we don't bring the mind to the object. Hmm? So attention is what makes the mind move to the object. That's why it is called in Sanskrit or Pali, Manasikara. Actually, the Indians, at least in the ancient times, they had the most penetrative analysis of the mind and of the cognition process. The modern psychology is slowly starting to learn from this knowledge of the yogis. Hmm? And the terminology of the modern psychology is slowly also getting influenced. Hmm? But this is still in the very beginning stage. Why? Because the matter of their investigation was the mind and the body. Hmm? And no other instrument. And when we understand the mind and the body and how they work together, we understand everything. As far as our experience in the world is concerned. So it is important to understand that when we have attention, our mind moves to the object. So the characteristic of attention is that it brings the mind into the movement towards the object. So when the mind moves towards the object, all things are happening. When the mind does not move towards the object, what is happening? This is very important to understand. This is a mystery. Where is the mind when you don't make it move towards the object? This is very, very important. But yet, we pay very little attention to that. But it is crucial for understanding the mind. When there is attention, we, so to say, put things into the mind. And the manifestation of this is that we are facing the object. Aramana abhimukhi bhava. Very precise definition. We are facing the object because we make the mind move towards the object. So we make the, literally, we make the object in the mind. Then things start happening. Then there can be sensation, then there can be perception, then there can be will and factors of the will that decide how we experience the object. And then there can be differentiation, all that comes together. Now, awareness is, in the Abhidharma, is the synonym of wisdom. What happens when there is awareness? The nature of awareness is bringing the light into the mind. Attention does not need to bring light into the mind. It is the awareness which brings mind into, which brings light into the mind. So when there is light in the mind, then we can differentiate according to the true characteristics of the objects of our experience. When there is no light in the mind, we experience in a perverse way. So the opposite of awareness is a mental perversion. Mental perversion is the synonym of ignorance in Buddhism. What is the mental perversion? Seeing that which is impermanent as being permanent, seeing that which does not bring lasting satisfaction as something that is, brings lasting satisfaction, seeing that which does not belong to the self as belonging to the self, and seeing the something self-existent in the our experience. Why we see something self-existent in our experience? Because we don't put the proper light into our experience. The awareness means sampajanya or sampajanya in Pali, which means sam together, being able to cognize together. And in a way also sam means correctly. Like samadhi means correct and equal application, adhana of the mind to the object. When we have samadhi, we apply the mind equally in balanced way to the object. So the mind has no ups and downs. Normally, we apply mind to the object, we are excited, we are dull. Why? Because the mind has no awareness. And that's why we see not according to the facts, we see in a distorted way. This seeing in the distorted way is called ignorance. And ignorance, in there is a wonderful Sanskrit Pali word for ignorance, avijja, avidya. Vidya means knowledge. Avidya means not knowledge. Vidya means also science, Veda. We have no science because we have no clarity in the mind. And what is the cause of light in the mind? The primary cause of light in the mind is samadhi. We are able to put the mind on the object in a balanced way. Not let it sink by dullness, by lethargy, sloth, torpor, and also not get it excited by grasping at the object, by being angry at the object, by doubting about the qualities we need for seeing the object properly, and by excitement, by worries, by remorse, and so on. All this makes the mind fickle. So when the mind is not fickle, there is awareness, because there is light in the mind, and it is not fickle because we apply mindfulness. So mindfulness contains both the samadhi, and it is a base for wisdom. So how do we know we have awareness? We know it because we have applied mindfulness. When the mindfulness is stable, we have awareness. Mindfulness is stable when the object does not wobble, we remember it clearly. The mindfulness means literally in Sanskrit or in Pali, memory. But here it means literally not memory, but it means It means that we are recollecting the object clearly, so that our mind does not wander around and go somewhere else, yet we are very, very clear what's going on everywhere. Suppose now I speak, so I'm mindful of what I'm speaking. So I see all of you, but I'm not distracted, I don't start to think what dress is she wearing, what hair she has, and so on, right? So I don't get confused about what I'm speaking about. This is mindfulness. So I can grasp clearly the meaning of the words I'm using, right? And this brings awareness. And when the awareness is there, then the mind does not think, is not excited, because we apply the mind to the object in a correct way and together. So this is the difference between the awareness and manasikara, the attention. We need attention to bring the mind to the object, but unless we have awareness, the object will not be clear, and we will not be able to distinguish it according to its real characteristics. So is it clear? So it is very important to think about these things, make it clear, then the meditation also becomes clear. If we don't ask the questions, we just meditate mechanically, and meditation is the process of getting rid of mechanical thinking, so that the mind becomes opened. Yes.
Do thoughts have sensations?
Well, there is no thought without sensation. This is also the factor of mind which must be always present. Otherwise the mind, once it goes to the object, it has a sensation. Either sensation of well-being or sensation of not well-being or neutral sensation. So sensation must be there, and sensation is the key for understanding meditation. We are deluded about meditation because we are deluded about sensation.
And you're using it the same as feeling tone, Brian?
Actually, not. It is not quite the same. It is similar, but not quite the same. You can say, I feel he is not coming tomorrow, but this is a sensation is different. Sensation means the immediate experience of the object, either as pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, by mind and by the body. Now, in order to refine the mind, we have to refine the sensations. That's the Vedana Anupassana. By refining the sensations, we are refining the mind. The Buddha explained this very, very clearly in Bahu Vedaniya Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya. You know the story? Very interesting. The two monks are arguing. No, actually, one monk and one layman who is expert in meditation are arguing how many sensations they are. So, because the Buddha teaches that neutral sensation is pleasant for the wise and unpleasant for the stupid. So he says, oh, there are only two sensations. No, you can find so many places Buddha teaches three sensations, five sensations, because you have mental sensation, and also teaching the other sensations in the course of meditation. You encounter all kinds of different sensations. So they come to the Buddha and they say, who is right, the two sensations or three sensations? So the Buddha says, yes, you are right, you are also right. And I have taught many, many, many sensations. If you want to understand meditation, you have to understand many, many sensations. Bahu Vedana. You have different sensations. You have sensations also connected with the renunciation. You have sensations connecting with enjoyment of the senses. You have many, many different kinds of sensations. I have taught all of them because the sensation is the place where the other mental factors meet. This is how it is explained. When there is a touch, there is sensation. When there is sensation, there is either sensation with Veda, with Vidya, with understanding, or sensation without understanding. If there is sensation without understanding, what will happen? Thirst. Because we do not really thirst the objects, we thirst for the sensation of the objects. So when we have thirst, then we will grasp. And the existence is, the continuity of existence is due to grasping. So the understanding how the touch brings sensation, either with wisdom or without wisdom, in a perverted way, is the central aspect of meditation. We are meditating in order to penetrate the sensations. Because the sensations is what deludes us when they are connected with ignorance, and the sensation is what illumines us when they are connected with awareness. So this dependent origination is based on this principle. So the feeling is all right, but it does not convey the immediate experience. Sensation does. So since we will talk about this scripture, so it would not be out of place to mention some basic concepts of the Yogacara. They are very, very useful for meditation. And we start with the same bhumi, the same chapter, from which is taken this text. This chapter is quite long, and it is still available in Sanskrit, the other chapters mostly not. So in this chapter it will explain how we actually, what objects we experience in meditation from the point of view of mind only. This is very important, and it is also connected in a way with our understanding of meditation and of this text. So according to Asanga, according to this tradition, this is based on, actually, on the Agamas. The Asanga is quoting one Revata Sutta. It does not exist in the northern tradition. It does not exist in southern tradition. So you can see that there are many, many sutras which have not been included. Just like the New Testament, many, many testaments, but not included, they discarded them if it does not fit into the picture. Right? You have studied that. Similar process in compiling the Tripitaka. They compile what is suitable for their concept. They don't compile what is not so suitable for their concept. So you have slight differences in this compilation, but the big differences in their interpretation in Abhidharma. Abhidharma is the interpretation of the sutras from the point of view of the highest reality. Okay, so according to Asanga, and this is very useful, unless we have a direct experience of the object of liberation, however you call it, as nirvana or as suchness, so we actually, in meditation, we have only two objects. But finally, in the scriptures like Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, which is a base scripture for Yogacara, our all experience is that. So we have two kinds of objects when we meditate. And he calls them the Pratibimba. Pratibimba is the same meaning as we have had this reflected image. So I have given you this example. We see a thing in the mirror and we believe that thing in the mirror is different from the mirror, but that thing in the mirror is of the same nature like the mirror itself. But we believe it is of something different. Similarly, we have objects in the mind, but we believe that these objects are outside of the mind. But they are not outside of the mind, they are of the same nature as the mind. So, in other words, the mind is our dependent origination. You have many different interpretation of the dependent origination. All Buddhists agree that what the Buddha realized under the Bodhi tree is the dependent origination. But the explanation of dependent origination, you will find many differences. Dependent origination based on karma, dependent origination based on mind, on the alaya mind, the worldly mind which sticks, or on the tathagata garbha, the mind which has no place, does not stick anywhere, which is a Buddha nature. Many different concepts. All have their logic. All are skillful means for understanding our experience. So it does not necessarily mean that one is the opposite of the other or contrary to the other. Now, according to this yogacara is called mind only because according to this concept, what we actually see is of the nature of the mind. It does not mean that this is of the nature of the mind, but it is the manifestation of the seeds which we have in the mind. So I see this as a table, but if you ask some other creatures, gods or fish, they will not see it as a table. Because they have the different vasanas, different perfumation of the mind by the previous experiences. So different samskaras, different things which put different factors which put things together. So just as the old Socrates have said, actually what we experience is what we remember. What we don't remember, we can't experience. So we experience in accordance with our energies contained in the mind. Now, sometimes the modern scientists are starting speculating on this aspect. Because the matter can be divided into emptiness. And emptiness is what you cannot grasp. But according to the Yogacara, this emptiness needs a base, and that base is a mind. This is how it differs from Madhyamika, which says that we don't need any base for emptiness. Emptiness can take care of itself. Okay, so what we see is as object and subject, this is called a very wonderful word for that. It is called vikalpa. Vi means a differentiation, kalpa means putting things together, fabricating. We are fabricating things, putting things together by differentiation. And this is our world. So there are two types of images in the mind when we meditate. The fabrications without differentiation, this is what we need when we practice shamatha with an object. We stay with the same object and we don't analyze it further. So now when you work with breath, if you practice shamatha, you stay with the same impression of the breath. Only then this impression will sublimate and become a mental image, right? You don't analyze the content of this experience, the vibrations, the warmth of the breath, the coolness of the breath. You may experience it, but you don't pay attention to it at all. So this is fabrication without differentiation. You stay with the same image and don't pay attention to any other image. So this is shamatha. When you stay with the same image, you will sublimate that image. If it is a suitable image, not every image. Now you have the fabrication by differentiation with differentiation. That is called savikalpa pratibimba. That is an image in the mind which is further differentiated in accordance with the content of the characteristics which appear together with this image. And that is what you use for vipassana. But actually, you can apply it even to daily life. We stay with the same image, or we change image by paying attention to different characteristics, right? That's what we do. So, according to this, actually, mind, what we impose on the mind, is, so to say, is falsely imposed, is fabricated. So what is the state of Buddha? He does not fabricate anything. We are fabricating, or the Buddha does not fabricate. Now, when we have direct experience of the object of liberation, be it nirvana or be it suchness, what will happen? Then we will penetrate the illusionary nature of these images. Then we will get two other objects in meditation, which when we master, we will become an arahat. What are these objects? They are called yavat bhavikata. They have such a wonderful words in Sanskrit for this. Yavat bhavikata, yatha bhavikata. So yavat bhavikata means the object as far as you can go. You cannot go beyond that. This is what you understand when this is what makes Buddhism different from other religions. First you have to understand the world, then you will understand that you will not be deluded about that which is beyond the world. And the world is what we are discussing here, the five aggregates, the six inner and the outer spheres, the 18 elements, the dependent origination, the Four Noble Truths. This is the world. These are the objects of wisdom. So that is yavat bhavikata. You cannot know more in the world in order to understand that this world is selfless. When you have directly the object of liberation, you understand what? That this world, this body and the mind, is selfless. This is the meaning of the dependent origination. There is no self-existing substance. So these are the things in the world, yavat bhavikata, as far as you can understand them. We have talked about this sutra where the Buddha says to the devata who wants to reach the end of the world, you cannot reach the end of the world by investigating, by seeing through the telescope and so on, through the instruments, but unless you have gone to the limit of the world, you will never get beyond suffering. So this is very important. This is Buddhism. So you have got yavat bhavikata, you know everything, because there is nothing beyond this. And you know yatha bhavikata, you know all this in terms of suchness. These skandhas, they are suchness. this I and so on, they are suchness, because they are what they are. They are the real base for our experience. And then it comes the non-dualistic aspect of suchness. You have the relative suchness, and you have the non-dualistic highest suchness that we chant in the Heart Sutra as the real characteristics of all the phenomena. So these join together. This is a yatha bhavikata. You understand everything in terms of suchness. Then when you have mastered this suchness, you have karya nishpati, you have done what is to be done. If you want to be an arahat, a disciple, you understand this, you can go beyond the world, beyond the impermanence of the world. Because you understand things as they are, as a non-self, and you understand things as suchness. So, just like the Heart Sutra explains, there is nothing not decreasing, not increasing, nothing to add, nothing to take away, not ultimately this or ultimately that. This is what we learn in the Heart Sutra. Not coming, not going, not arisen, not ceased, not eternal, not destroyed. And this is karya nishpati. When one sees it, then one has done the job. So this makes a meditation very interesting, this approach. We may agree or we may disagree. It is not a dogma, it is a very useful tool for the meditation. And when we understand more Buddhism, actually all these theories, they are just tools to understand the, how we work, what is our experience. So there is not necessarily any contradiction between the one and the other, just different aspects. And this is what is so fascinating about this book, because it brings into the aspect, into the meditation, the aspect of the how to become an arahat, also the aspect how to become the fully enlightened Buddha, how to understand the dualistic way, how to understand in a non-dualistic way. All this is contained. So it makes sense. So with this understanding, we can get more insight into what this text is saying. Now, we have explained that this meditation on the breath we can do either as in Theravada or we can do either as advised here. What is advised here, we have explained, is more linked to the yoga tradition. We have also pointed out the Theravada has a tendency of differentiating itself from the yoga tradition. This is not the case of Yogacara. In Yogacara, they, in a way, they receive this whole heritage of the yoga tradition, but they reform it according to the Buddhist philosophy of selflessness. So you can use yoga for realization of the selflessness. And in that case, the observation of the whole body, of the subtle breath and the gross breath, and paying attention to the subtle, because by paying attention to the subtle, we get the subtle sensation. And the subtle sensation spreads to the whole body. And this is what we need. Especially if we're interested in yoga, we're interested in qigong. This is what the awareness we have to develop. To see the body as a whole and the interconnections in the body, how it works. So this understanding of the body is the essence of the yoga, but understanding of the body from the spiritual perspective. So with this understanding we can go into this text. We have explained in order to understand the meditation on the breath, we have to practice five practices. The first one, counting. Second one, being enlightened about the aggregates. Third one, being enlightened about the dependent origination on the base of breath. Being enlightened about the aggregates on the base of breath. Being enlightened about the Four Noble Truths on the base of the breath. And then to complete this understanding by studying these 16 exercises which are explained in the Anapana Sati Sutta. So we have covered the counting, and it is very important when we get the whole picture, and the whole picture we get step by step, then you can get clarity by counting, you can get clarity by investigating the aggregates, you can get clarity by investigating dependent origination, investigating the Four Noble Truths, which our text, through training by engaging with reality, he calls it. It's interesting. It's not in Chinese, but maybe in Tibetan. Anyway, when we know all this, then we can understand in depth the 16 exercises. And we can connect them together. So, connect them together to see them as a whole. So we can get even clarity by breathing in and breathing out, by counting the breath, breathing in and breathing out mindfully. That's what is counting about. So now one different aspect which if we want to understand this text, it starts with this. It says by devoting oneself to that practice, breathing in and breathing out mindfully, that means counting the breath. Here the four stages of the breath, paying more and more attention to the in-between breath, which sublimates the sensation. Cultivating in time and again with continuity, physical pliances and mental pliances arise. Pliancy means prashrabdi. It is translated as pliancy, but it implies many, many things. In the Theravada tradition, this pliancy is connected with lahuta, with lightness, with mudita, with smoothness, with ujjukata, with straightness, with nipunata, with expertise in whatever one does. You can understand it as, I translate as clarity and relaxation. appliance is of course a good translation. It translates literally what the Abhidharma Kosha says, kamanyata, the ability to work with the mind smoothly. So what is the difference here with the Theravada tradition? According to the Theravada tradition, you can combine shamatha and vipassana really only, and when you combine the shamatha and vipassana, you are open to the middle path. You can realize the middle path. Normally they are separate, but when you combine them, you can realize the middle path. This is what the verse in Dhammapada says, nati jhanam apanyasa, nati panya ajanasa, yasa panya cha jhanam cha, so nibbanasa santike. There is no jhana without the wisdom, there is no wisdom without the jhana. One who has both wisdom and the jhana, he is in the vicinity or facing the nirvana. We are facing the when we face the nirvana, when we face that which is beyond the world, automatically the shamatha and vipassana will merge into one. When we don't face the supermundane object, when we don't face emptiness, signlessness, and desirelessness, then they will not merge together into one. This is very important to understand, and we usually don't understand it. But it can all happen. The 37 factors of enlightenment will come together, so the Eightfold Noble Path will also come together. When there is an object you cannot grasp, otherwise they will always be separate. We are always working with separate virtues. We cannot put them together. But we put all virtues together when the object is beyond the grasp. In this tradition, because it emphasizes a non-dualistic approach, you should put the shamatha and vipassana aspect together in this state of prashabdi, in the state of pliancy, in the state of relaxation and clarity. This is a difference. So the emphasis is not on reaching the supermundane object, but the emphasis is on non-dualistic emphasis and not differentiating between the nirvana and the samsara. Keeping the same clarity in all situations. That's why this suchness has the aspect, the relative aspect, and has the aspect of the absolute aspect. Relative aspect, absolute aspect. All is one, all is suchness, all is emptiness. So you do not need to reach anything. This is what we chant in the Heart Sutra. The non-reaching is the practice. But non-reaching you can only practice in the state of pliancy. This is the most important principle of Zen. This is the most important principle of Mahamudra, of Dzogchen, and so on. So the effort is not to reach something, but the effort is stay in this state of relaxation and clarity, and combine this understanding that all is just image in the mind, and letting the images arise spontaneously. So that much for for now, too many informations may bring mental indigestion. So let us do meditation and digest all this, and hopefully we will become more knowledgeable about the practice. Okay. Where is Sarah? So we may
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.